Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
We don't have much to talk about here on the podcast today. Chris Graham, Rod Mullins talking NASCAR in Richmond last night. And yeah, it was just a boring race. Not a lot, especially at the end. Just nothing going on there. What happened? Martin Truex Jr. led 288 laps. He was cruising to the win. I think he was a half lap away, Ron, from getting the white flag, and he would have won. Mm-hmm. And then all hell broke loose.
Is this April Fool's? Because obviously we started out, you know, making this sound like it was a boring race. But, well, in some respects, it was kind of a boring race there for about 200 and some laps. But still, hey, you know, at the end of the race last night, I was surprised. You know, Bubba Wallace goes, gets into Kyle Larson, turns him around. I thought the first thing that's going to happen, we're going to have tempers flare. Sure as the world, because Kyle Larson was kind of minding his own business at that point. Then we see the opportunity. Some of these guys needed to pit. Some of them didn't have, you know, decent tires. Truex was one of those. Hamlin, in the meantime, had a cleaner set of tires. And when they had the restart, Hamlin just comes out of nowhere, takes over and takes the lead and, wins the race. And much to the chagrin of Martin Truex Jr., who says that he really didn't appreciate a teammate racing him like that. So it tells me there's a lot of trouble in the Joe Gibbs camp right now. They got rid of Kyle Busch. That's one thing. But now they still have something festering between Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex. I'm going to go right here and I'm going to say, I know it's April 1st. This is not an April Fool's joke, but I think Martin Truex is done after this year. I think he's just going to go ahead and he's going to walk away from it, and he's going to say, I'm done. He doesn't like this sort of thing, and it definitely showed last night.
Well, so you went through a lot there, and so much happened in those last two laps.
Oh, yeah.
It went to overtime, of course.
Went to overtime.
The race in the pits first. Hamlin's team, just a narrow edge there. Bubba Wallace, who had been running in the top five most of the way, he had an issue with the back. What was it, the back left rear tire?
Yeah.
Couldn't get out, and he ended up finishing in the double digits. So Hamlin wins the race out of the pits. But then, now, Truex alleged, both after the race, right off with the Fox people, and then again in the media center, that he thought Hamlin jump-started the
right.
Restart. So NASCAR says not, but I don't know. They showed that a bunch of times last night, Rod. I'm not thinking they didn't. I mean, it's the question, I guess we could say.
Yeah, it's the question about it. And, you know, I'm watching it on television and I look at it, and the first thing I say is he got a jump. He got a jump on Martin Truex right there as they're coming into the turn right before they get into that, you know, restart zone. There's that restart zone that you can see generally highlighted on a lot of the races, but he was in forward motion at that point. I mean, this was not just something of cruising around. This was, he had accelerated at that point. And I think he was doing that to get the upper hand, the edge on Martin Truex. NASCAR goes back and says, no call. It's not going to be anything. We're going to debate about anything, about taking anything away from Hamlin with this. And even if Hamlin had ended up losing the race because of that restart, if they were going to go to that drastic of a degree, Martin Truex would have still ended up finishing third out of it because he didn't have a car that the tires on it were good enough to, you know, to make it to the end of the race. But I liked some of the comments that Kyle Petty put on here a little bit earlier today, and I listened to some of those. And Kyle Petty compares Martin Truex Jr. to Eeyore from the Winnie the Pooh story. I mean, he just calls him Eeyore. He says, oh, poor pitiful me and everything like that. And the cameras zoom in on him down in the media center or down on pit road. And first thing he says, it's nothing good about his race team, nothing good about his car, nothing good about, you know, how well they held on. This was probably one of his better finishes he had had. He's finished well at Richmond, but he struggled there toward the end of it. And yet here he is, and not giving credit to his team, praising his team out of it and doing what he does best. He loves to give credit to his team. This year has just been a quote unquote hell of a year for Martin Truex Jr. I mean, it's been one of where people have, you know, questioned him. You know, he's with a new girlfriend now. people were wondering back when Sherry Pollock's passed away back in the fall last year, what had happened between the two of them. He's taken some heat there. You know, there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on about this with Martin Truex. And then he waited to the last minute to decide, well, if he's going to come back or not. He kind of waited till the last minute. But I think this is pretty much got him convinced. Maybe I need to go ahead and start looking on the way out with this because I'm not getting anywhere. At least I'm not getting anywhere where I'm hoping to get to.
I was surprised that after the race, as they're still going around the track, that he bumped into Larson a couple of times. Larson said afterwards that he was probably more mad at Hamlin, and he just, and Larson was the closest guy to him. Right. But then he caught up to Hamlin and bumped him three times.
Yeah.
And you know, as you mentioned, they're teammates. So, I mean, it'd be awkward if they, even if they weren't teammates, it would be like, okay, that's an interesting little love taps there. But what is going on in that garage now after that?
It would be interesting to be at the garage in North Carolina this morning and finding out once everybody has gotten settled back in and Joe Gibbs goes and puts the banner up on the wall, which I think that'll either be, that was either today or will be tomorrow probably. But, you know, you've got two other race teams in that three stable organization there with Bell. You've also got Truex and you've got Hamlin. Hamlin, it seems like he's getting the better end of the deal right now. He's getting the better end of the deal, sort of like what he got here 2 years ago when Kyle Busch was complaining about things just not going right. Nobody's really negotiating about things. They're not being serious about this whole stuff. I don't know if Joe Gibbs is just really wanting to hold on to him because he's the future, or at least, you know, however it's going to, you know, what's going to take place. But, you know, I was surprised too. I was like you. I was surprised that he came up and he hit Larson and he laid into him a couple of good swipes right there, you know, hard swipe too on the cool down lap. And then he goes and he bumps Denny Hamlin from behind. And you would think, okay, he's part of your race team. You give him a bump, you say, hey, you know, hey, good job on the win or something. This was not just one. This was about three or four last night. And so there was definitely something brewing there last night. And of course, we didn't get any comments from Denny Hamlin what was going on. I think what was interesting, most of the cameras took off and went looking for Kyle Larson and Bubba Wallace. That's what they were afraid of. I think, you know, we remember back here maybe about a year or two ago that Kyle Larson and Bubba Wallace got together at Kansas, if I'm not mistaken. They got together, and next thing you know, Bubba comes out shoving Kyle Larson, and of course, he got, you know, served a little bit of a punishment out of it. But I was expecting worse. And then, lo and behold, they came by, they shook hands with each other, and Bubba Wallace said, you know, hey, I'm sorry. You know, you got a little bit loose. I got a little bit loose out of it. I tapped you, didn't mean to and stuff. I hope you understand. And some people are even asking the question whether or not that was almost like a deliberate way to bring out a caution flag with so many laps left to go. That's being tossed around now of another conspiracy theory in NASCAR. I don't know if it was or not, but you know, Kyle Larson wasn't bothered by it too much. He just said, oh, now we're on better friends. We're better friends now, better acquaintances from what we used to be. We get along now. So there was nothing, how can we say this? Something out of nothing out of something between those two last night at the race.
Yeah, there was nothing there. I mean, in the post-match or post-race interviews right after on Fox, all Larson talked about was the Truex issue. Mm-hmm. He talked a little bit about the Wallace thing, but he certainly didn't make it anything bad. But the focus seemed to be more on the those taps at the on that cooldown lap. And yeah, you know, that conspiracy theory thing. I mean, I thought about that last night too. Like, man, you know, if you're a Martin Truex fan, and if you're Martin Truex Jr. yourself, you're like, I mean, he was literally less than half a lap away from getting the white flag. And the only way, I mean, because the countdown, those last, 10, 12 laps, it just, the gap wasn't narrowing. He had a pretty firm lead. And so, you know, you might be inclined to say the only way this race changes, the only way this result changes is that way. But Logano finishes second. You mentioned that Truex was in fourth. Who else had good runs last night?
Well, Joey Logano, like you mentioned, finishing second, probably one of his better finishes so far on this 2024 season. Chase Elliott comes in the top five. that was one thing Kyle Petty was talking about earlier in his little thing that he had online. He said, you know, and Chase Elliott finally shows up. And I agree. I mean, he finally showed up. He wasn't much of a, you know, hinging factor in this race, was going to take a race from anybody by any means, but he stayed in the top 10. Christopher Bell finished sixth. I thought that was a good finish for him. William Byron finished seventh. Keselowski finished eighth. Keselowski now has a winless streak, I think, in something like 107 races. So now it's like up to 108 or maybe a little bit more than that. And then Tyler Reddick closed out the top 10 with a 10th place finish. Josh Berry, I thought he raced awful well last night, considering he had some issues at different times. Noah Gragson came out of nowhere, finished 12th, but short track racing is his sort of style. I think he enjoys that, especially from his days racing in Las Vegas and around the circuit in the Xfinity Series. He loves a short track. And so Bubba Wallace finishes 13th. Eric Jones finished 14th for the Legacy Motor Club, and Ross Chastain finished 15th. You know, a couple of surprises here out of this group as I'm looking over this list. I was a little bit surprised with Austin Dillon finishing as low as he did. Usually Richmond's a track that he likes really well. Daniel Suarez, I thought, was going to be able to have at least a good time last night on the track. He did not have a good race, and last year's points champion, Ryan Blaney, did not have a good night last night. They were talking about him, it seemed like, constantly. He finished 19th out of it, was still on the lead lap, but still, it was a rough go for him in this race at Richmond.
So I snuck a peek at the weather forecast for you this weekend in Martinsville. It looks good. It's not going to be as warm today as we're recording. It's in the 70s where I am and down in the 80s in Martinsville. So wow. Could we not have that kind of weather? It's going to be in the 60s, though, this weekend, and no rain in the forecast. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that because there was rain last night in Richmond, yesterday afternoon and last night in Richmond, and that presented some challenges. NASCAR overcame them, but they had to do some things differently last night.
Yeah, they ran that rain tire, and that was the first real test of this rain tire in actual driving conditions, not, you know, on a road course, but actually on a track, in a track or an oval situation. And I thought the thing passed with flying colors last night. I mean, it was one of those things where they were going to have to test it sooner or later. They've had it out on the road courses before. They've had that out. You know, they didn't have the wipers on the cars this time around like they normally do for a road course, just in case something like that happens. But they put that road tire on, that weather tire, rain tire, and it wore pretty good. It wasn't bad. I don't think that some of these guys were driving the fastest in it that they could possibly drive in, because I think they were a little bit unsure what this tire was going to produce. And it was a great performance for that tire. Goodyear definitely needed that, considering what had taken place back at Bristol a couple of weeks ago. They needed a good performance out of a tire, and I think we're ready now with this rain tire once again in the race or in the season.
They had to do, I think there was a caution on lap 64 towards the end of the first stage. They ended up just deciding to run that under caution, and they had to mess with the competition, whether the getting to the pits was either competition or non-competition, those kind of things. But, you know, the weather laid off at the end, and we got a good clean finish there the last few hundred laps, at least. Seemed like it was a pretty good clean finish. So what can we look forward to now this week? As I mean, this is another race you'll be covering in person, mm-hmm, in Martinsville. What's race week like, and what can we expect from the racing this weekend?
Well, race week in Martinsville is just a whole town thing is what it is. I know that they usually don't go and have school sometime around on a Friday or something like that. They go and let them have school out, or at least they did in the past. But I don't know how that's going to play in with the eclipse coming up for this start of the week right after the race and so forth. But when we go to Martinsville, definitely a different kind of atmosphere. This is the true roots of short track racing, any way you want to look at it. This is where it all started. This is where Clay Earls, Clay Campbell now, who has taken over control of the track from his grandfather there, Clay Earls, and he's, you know, assumed ownership of it. NASCAR is helping him out, and they're trying to keep this as a regular race on the circuit. We're going to have trucks in town on Friday night. We're not going to be able to see that. But on Saturday, they're going to have the Xfinity race, and that's going to be a good one because Xfinity doesn't visit Martinsville on a regular basis like they used to years ago. And so it'll be good to see that kind of racing again on Saturday. And then on, you know, Sunday evening, starting, I think, around 3 to 4 o'clock, somewhere in that neighborhood, we're in for another late race, but we'll be starting things out with Martinsville. We'll kind of go partially under the lights considering how this race goes. I mean, this could be one that just lasts a good while because you don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be still some tempers flaring, I'm sure, from Richmond. Some people are going to be, not in some good moods, like Joey Gase I was telling you about. You need to go back and check that video out in the Xfinity race from this past weekend at Richmond. Tears the back end of his car off, the bumper part of his car, his Xfinity car, takes it and sails the piece of carbon fiber, sheet metal, whatever you want to call it, sends it airborne in true Tony Stewart style, but this is not a helmet. He throws it onto a car that had bumped him and knocked him out of the race and caused him to wreck. And so I'm sure there'll be some fines probably coming out of that one. Somebody made mention of it on one of the threads. They said, well, definitely not going to get an OSHA award for safety on that one as he handled it with his bare hands when he pulled it out. But, that's going to be a rough race for all the teams involved. There's very little room. I mean, this is essentially a flat track, got a little bit of slight incline of banking as you go into the turns. But other than that, it's flat. And it's going to be a first for me seeing Martinsville. Drove by there 16 years ago, drove by there on a pretty semi-regular basis and always wondered what it would be like to be there at a race. This weekend, I'm going to actually have the chance to be able to enjoy that. Hopefully tomorrow, maybe even get some quotes on here from Clay Campbell and talk to him a little bit from, what's coming up for this weekend and what NASCAR is hoping to do with this race and having all three of the top series there at the same time. It could be a really good race.
So you mentioned the flatness of the track compared, mm-hmm. You were just at Bristol.
Right.
How different is the race? I mean, they're similar size tracks. They're both small tracks. Mm-hmm. Half mile roughly each. But how different is it? Or do you expect, because as you said, you've not actually physically been at Martinsville. You've watched the races over the years on TV. How different is it for the racers, for the drivers out there to have to race on this kind of a flatter track, short track, as opposed to Bristol?
Well, for me, I think from just looking at it, it's a lot of slamming bodies of cars. You're driving down into the turns, sort of like what you are at a road race, like at COTA here a couple of weeks ago. And then you're driving down into that corner to kind of defend and kind of protect that groove of what you're in right there. If anybody else is in there and they're trying to come in underneath you, it's going to be too late. I mean, you're going to cut them off. They're going to end up spinning somebody around or they're going to take you out. It could be a variety of different things there. But this banking is the big thing. And when I say banking, I'd say the banking is probably, I'm just giving it an emphasis right here. It's kind of hard with the camera, but probably somewhere like this. Whereas uh-huh. Bristol is a little bit more like this. Uh-huh. And then, of course, the straightaways and the backstretch both are flat. But they go into a little bit of a turn, not much of one when they get into that curve. And they've got a little bit of some banking with it. I guess probably the reminder of it, of what it's like, is when Ross Chastain shot out like a rocket last year toward the end of that season and, made that video game move to knock Denny Hamlin out of the playoffs that year. That's the kind of track that we've got. He used that momentum up on that high side and a little bit of that banking to kind of, hit the wall and kind of carry him on around and kind of slingshot him is kind of what it did. He just held the gas wide open. And so, it's a hard track. It's a hard track. One of the originals on the circuit. And I'm sure it will be another interesting race at Martinsville.
Yeah. I wanted to look it up. You have a your teaching background. I know you've done a lot of work in different, parts of, education. So I'm going to give these numbers to you. The banking at Bristol Motor Speedway is 24 degrees to 28 degrees in the turns. Front stretch, 5 to 9 degrees, 4 to 8 in the back stretch. Martinsville, No banking on the straightaways and 12 degrees on the turn. So that kind of illustrates what you were saying there. It's a very different track, even though they're the same width, same length or whatever, same oval, but I mean, very different kind of driving.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought those numbers up and you didn't expect me to add them because I'm not a math major. I'm an English major. That's the reason why I leave the math and figuring of all this stuff up to my wife who does all the math. But yeah, that banking though, I think I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I went down the track at Bristol walking down and I literally thought my knees were going to just collapse because it was crunching. It was bone crunching. And then you're in a car going around through there like a slingshot around that track. And then you're being jarred by the concrete being a little bit uneven. You know, what was surprising out of this, I don't know if you heard Dale Earnhardt Jr. come out. Dale Earnhardt Jr. feels like every concrete surface or every concrete track needs to be just dug up and got rid of and go back to pavement because he said this concrete had an effect on these tires here at Bristol a couple of weeks ago. Dale's getting a little bit more outspoken, I guess, now that he's not under a umbrella with NBC like he had been. But, you know, that's kind of a bold statement to make. You know, it's concrete's rough. I will say that concrete's rough, but it doesn't fall away. It doesn't come apart like pavement does, especially if it starts getting a little bit too hot. You'll see a difference with it. But now for me about this banking and so forth, it's just going to be so different to be able to walk out there on that historic track and be able to just be there. Gosh, 48 or 49, I think, is when they opened that track up for racing, maybe around 47, but somewhere in that neighborhood in the late 40s is when that track went into operation.
What I got here is 47. So you're okay. Right on. Yep. You're exactly so, right. Yep.
So it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like walking into Mecca almost in one way. It's kind of walking into this place and you're like, you immediately, like I did kind of like at Indianapolis, you almost like want to fall to your knees and you just want to start facing in a certain direction and give thanks to the racing gods that you're there. I mean, it's a track in and of itself. Bristol is that way, but it doesn't have the age and the prestige on it like a Martinsville does. And, you know, so many races have been decided at Martinsville. I know that some of the drivers don't like Martinsville. I know Hendrick Motorsports, they love Martinsville. It's always been a great place for them. We'll just have to wait and see what happens this coming weekend. Who knows? It could be a good race for Richard Childress Racing to get back on top with things. Kyle Busch needs definitely a good finish in this race, and he needs a win because things aren't looking good for them right now at this point. And they're still trying to scratch their head and wonder, what in the world do we have to do to try to get a race or try to get a win out of this?
Every year since 1949, a race has been held. Yep. And that's the basically the first year of that top division in NASCAR. So they've had a race every year. There's been basically a NASCAR Cup Series there. And I was trying to find a estimate of how much it cost when they built it. I saw, because I found one for Bristol, $600,000 when it'll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that now.
Oh, I mean, and then imagine when the resurfacing went to concrete.
Yeah.
You know, that was costly too. I mean, pavement is costly, but now when they went to concrete and how the concrete had to be laid, oh my gosh, that's an in and of itself, a very difficult task. One that I wouldn't want to do. I would not want to get out there and try to do that because you mess something up. I mean, Darrell Waltrip brought it up too. He says, they're going to have to bring the grinders back out here. They're going to have to bring the grinders back out on the track, grind some of this rough stuff up. And yeah, maybe that's what they need to do at Bristol, but you know, you only have concrete in the turns at Martinsville. So you'll have pavement on the straightaway in the front stretch and the back stretch, and you'll have concrete in the turn. So it's a little bit more durable. Let's say it that way. It's more durable being the turns for concrete.
Well, you are going to have another good weekend in Martinsville, and we will look forward to all the coverage. Of course, you'll be covering the race on Saturday night, the Xfinity race, and then the Sunday race as well, which could end up being a twi-night doubleheader. We can use baseball terminology there, depending on how things go on Sunday. But we'll be looking for your coverage and, of course, talk to you again next Monday. Any last thoughts as you're getting ready to head to Martinsville?
I was afraid you were going to throw something out at me of some kind of April Fool's joke, like I earlier got when I flipped on here and I was looking at some news and found out that Kelly Harper had been fired at Tennessee. And I thought, oh, it's just a joke. But no, they got rid of her at Tennessee. And so I'm just like, yeah, kind of a surprise there for that one. And the shuffling continues at Tennessee in the women's basketball program.
All she did was win 20 games every year.
Yeah, she won 20 games. But, you know, that I know that one person that – that went to Tennessee, knows Tennessee really well. They told me, you know, that's great. 20 wins is wonderful, but no, 20 wins and then losing out in the first round or the second round or something like that and not being in the, at least in the Elite Eight or down to the Final Four, that's not a successful Tennessee season. So
they should have hired Kenny Brooks away from Virginia Tech like Kentucky did.
Well, you know, they should have. I thought about that. But of course, it was a little bit too early. Kentucky came open. I was a little bit surprised at that Kentucky move. That kind of surprised me. And I think Whit Babcock kind of made the comment and stuff that money wasn't exactly the greatest thing going for them right there at that point about being able to maybe retain Kenny Brooks and keep him. And so, hey, when you're Kentucky, when you're a basketball school and you've got the alumni and you've got the coffers running over with money, whether it's male or female, whatever it is, you've got some money there, and they put up some money to get Kenny Brooks in there.
Well, look at us talking women's basketball here at the end of the NASCAR podcast. Hey, as we're finishing up this recording, we're an hour and a half away from we're not in the Final Four yet with everybody in the women's, but this might be the game of the tournament. Iowa and LSU rematch from last year's championship game, Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese. That's an hour and a half away. So I've got my popcorn ready.
Well, I'm going to have to get some too. I'm going to have to flip over and watch a little bit of it. I watched North Carolina State yesterday. The men just absolutely decimate Duke. I mean, there was just no other way around it. And Kim has an uncle that used to be a beat writer for several newspapers in North Carolina. Big Duke fan. I just kept quiet yesterday. I just didn't say another word because I know the Dukies are probably hurting right now after that, because who would have thought NC State would be there? And, you know, and especially now, what, both teams, the men's and the women's teams, both are in the tournament down to the final thing. And so I'm like, you know, wow, it's just topsy-turvy thing. I was a little bit surprised that Tennessee got beat, but also I kept on thinking, you know, it's this Virginia thing about Purdue. They got ousted last year, and they've remembered that, and they're going to come back, and, you know, they made a showing. And I was laughing over the Tennessee fans last night on Facebook that was getting there. And what's the guy that he's the tall guy. And of course he pretty much says what he wants to when the microphone is put in front of him, but
Zach,
I think a lot of, and a lot of the Tennessee fans were calling him a punk. They were just calling him a punk. Somebody needed to go out and take care of him and stuff. He's a punk. But you know, hey, he plays basketball.
He's a 7'4", 300 pound punk.
I don't think
that to his face.
I don't think I'm going to. I'd need a step stool to say that to him. I'm not going to go up to somebody like that and just say, "Hey, punk." No, that's not going to. That's not going to pay off in the long run.
And he had 40 points and 16 rebounds in that game. Now, if it gets to be a Purdue UConn final, I mean, I, like most of the rest of the country, can't stand Dan Hurley, the UConn coach, and I don't want to see UConn win two straight. But as a Virginia person, I don't want to see Purdue become the second team to lose to a 16 seed and then the next year win the championship. I want that to be Virginia's story. So,
I do too.
Here's the solution. Go Pack.
Well, that's all we can hope for. That's all we can hope for at this point. I mean, at least keep it in the ACC and keep that at least close by. But, you know, what was the crazy thing I heard about Dan Hurley from UConn today? Wears the same suit, the same pair of socks, the same underwear, everything to every game. And I hope to God they clean it and they take it and they put it in the washer and everything and they clean it after every game, because I wouldn't want to be sitting next to him on the bench and stuff during one of these high-pressure games.
We had a similar story, you know, when Terry Holland, the legendary former University of Virginia coach, passed away last year. Mm-hmm. We Jerry Radcliffe and I did a podcast with a number of former players and coaches. We just had a Zoom full of me. Just like Brady Bunch times 10 number of people on this podcast with us. And they told a story about when Virginia won the 1976 ACC tournament, which was the big the first time Virginia had ever won an ACC tournament, first time they ever qualified for an NCAA tournament. They won the three games in the Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland, and they had to beat three ranked teams to do so. And Terry Holland was apparently also, it sounds like Dan Hurley, a very superstitious person. Yep. And he would also, if he won, he would, wear the same things if he, until that particular outfit lost. There was even a story about how Craig Littlepage, who eventually became the athletics director of Virginia, but he was an assistant coach under Terry.
Right.
One time was shaving his head. He liked to keep his head shaved bald, and he had a bad cut on the back of his head because he was rushing that day. Mm-hmm. They won the game that night, and Terry insisted that he keep the scar, and on like a long winning streak. So he had to like keep digging in at this thing so that the scar wouldn't go away until the winning streak went away. So, Terry wore the same clothes through all three games of the ACC tournament. And according to a couple former players and Craig Littlepage, it was quite ranked there on the sidelines by the end of the championship game.
Okay, well, now I get it. So, I mean, but at least another thing, too, if we go into the professional thing of baseball, at least it's not dog hair, and especially deceased dog hair at that, and rubbing it on the chest for good luck. You know, I mean, Marge Schott, I've never forgotten that. I don't think Lou Piniella will ever forget that either. And coming up and saying, Lou, you need some good luck. Reach into a Ziploc bag and you rub that on. You know, that's not right with me. So, but
yeah, your Cincinnati Reds beat my Nationals this weekend with a big rally in the ninth inning yesterday. I had that one already counted as a win, so I was a little upset that our closer couldn't close it. But baseball started, so the world's back on its axis as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm kind of with bated breath, kind of hanging by here just to see how. You know, Cincinnati's going to get out of the gate here and how they're going to do. And, oh, speaking of that, I meant to tell you this also. There's this wild rumor going on, and it may involve the Nationals. I'm not sure yet, but there's a wild rumor going around. This is not an April Fool's joke, by the way, that they are talking about Bristol Motor Speedway hosting a baseball game.
Interesting.
And the talk is it's the Atlanta Braves.
Okay.
It'll be the Braves taking on somebody, and I'd heard it might be the Nationals. I don't know, but, you know, talking with family yesterday, somebody had asked me, says, why don't they go and bring back football back to the track again? And I think one reason why they don't bring it back is because the playoffs and the way that they all fall together and stuff in September, that's a very crucial time. You're going to be talking, you know, from the spring race and getting everything ready for the fall race. There's things that have to be done. If I was going to do anything with Bristol Motor Speedway, if it's not a Major League Baseball game, I would see if I couldn't just go and host a Racing Bowl football tournament. I mean, or a football game or something like that. If the weather was good enough, that's where the question is, whether the weather could be good enough in, say, December or January. And it's iffy sometimes, but that would be a good one, you know, to be able to utilize that track. But I don't know. And then that takes away from the money getter for Speedway Children's Charities too, because you'd have to have all that stuff taken down. You'd have to play football there. You'd miss out on the Speedway and lights. And then that's money that the people are paying, you know, good bucks to go and see and donating to Speedway Children's Charities. So it's kind of iffy right now at this point. Don't know what's really going to happen. I would think baseball would probably be a little easier to do than a football game. So we'll just have to, you know, stay close and see what comes out of it.
At Virginia Tech Tennessee game, they finally did, was way too late. I mean, you remember, I mean, Virginia Tech and Tennessee back in the late 90s through, you know, there was a good period there, 8 or 10 years, where you could have matched those teams up every year there, Bristol Motor Speedway, and it would have been a national championship caliber game.
Yeah.
By the time they played it, the two programs were on their way out of that realm. And so it just didn't ever live up to the hype that it could have had. But yeah, baseball, man, I tell you what, that'd be interesting. Maybe start with a minor league game and then and get some, you know, get the logistics worked out and then have the Braves, you know, you say the Braves and the Nats. I mean, Down in your parts, aren't you guys as close or closer to Cincinnati as you are to?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're closer. We always were closer to Cincinnati for a lot of people. That's always been the strong point of, I think, this area, especially southeastern Kentucky and southern West Virginia, going into southern Ohio. That's always been a big thing. The Reds, I can remember growing up, the Reds were on a, gosh, it was a 10,000, 5,000, 10,000 watt radio station that was just booming then and everything and carried the Reds. You could go to sleep at night and listen to the Reds. And then it became before, you know, all was said and done, Ted Turner had the superstation. Then Atlanta just latched on and became America's team. And Cincinnati kind of just got forgotten about. And then all the big names were gone by that time. You know, you still had Bench, who finally retired in what, 83, I think, is when he finally retired. But Rose was gone. Morgan was gone. Most of the team had went on its way. Huh. Nobody, you know, thought anything about Cincinnati. And then in 90, they win the World Series. Big time World Series win against the Oakland A's in 4-game sweep, but it just seemed like they never could get their footing back again to, you know, kind of reclaim that regional, you know, I almost call it like an Appalachian baseball team is what I'd refer to it as, because a lot of people really loved to follow the Reds back during that time. But now it's a little bit more of the Braves fans more so than it is the Cincinnati fans.
Interesting. Interesting. Interesting insight there. So, Rod, have a great time down in Martinsville for us, and we'll be waiting for your reports. And until then, thank you for your time and your insight this week.
All right, appreciate it. We'll take a picture of one of those hot dogs and send to you guys. So,
world famous
hot dogs. So.
You've told me about the hot dogs. I'm gonna need to hear about it. I might need to get down there for one. So,
I've been told by some people, yeah, they're good. Then I've been told by some people I wouldn't touch them. So we're going to find out. We're going to see if they really look good, if they taste good. If they are, then you'll hear from us on Sunday. If not, then you're going to bet we're somewhere recovering from this, whatever it's going to be.
On Monday.
Yeah, on Monday is what it's going to be. So,
well, have a great time, Rod. Thanks for your time, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.